Welcome to Epilogue, Press TV's review programme where we look at books that claim to expose the true nature of the societies in which we live. I'm Martin Short, and today here in London we're reviewing Military Inc. Inside Pakistan's Military Economy by Aisha Siddiqa. Aisha joins us now on the phone from Islamabad. Hello, Aisha. With a PhD.
Hi, Martin, how are you?
You're there, good. With a PhD in War Studies from King's College London, she is an independent political and defence analyst. And in our studio, I'm joined by three other experts on Pakistan. Mohammed Ziauddin, the London correspondent of Dawn, the English language newspaper in Pakistan. Amir Ghori, head of news and current affairs in London for the GEO network, recently banned, I understand, in Pakistan. And by Aki Nawaz, a leading light in London's music scene, a political activist, and a frequent visitor to Pakistan. Before we get into the book, let's just remind ourselves that last week, President Musharraf took off his general's uniform for the last time, as we hope, as President Bush had suggested, and handed over the role of Chief of Army Staff to General Ashfaq Kayani. But now he's the plainclothes president. Will the Pakistan army he has headed for so long surrender any part of its power? Well, after reading your book, Dr. Siddiqa, I guess the answer is no.
Well, yes, there are two things here now. If you look at the military, one is, Musharraf withdrawing from politics, but then you have a larger issue, which is, will the military withdraw from politics? My main thesis in the book is that the reason I look at the military economy is because it's an extension of its political power. My conclusion, one of my conclusions is that because it's so economically powerful and politically powerful, therefore it has least interest in withdrawing from politics.
Well, it appears it would have no interest whatever in withdrawing from politics. But could you just, as the obvious question, why did you call the book Military Inc.?
Well, it was just a provocative title, I'll be honest. Military Incorporated, it's the changing nature of the military all over the world. Not just Pakistan, but all over the world. One of my theses is that military capital is far bigger today than what we imagine it to be. It has expanded all over the world, including the United States, United Kingdom. You can find it in Iran, Thailand, China, Myanmar, a number of countries. But what makes it very interesting is when you see a combination of this expansion of military capital and its impact on authoritarian polity. Or in authoritarian politics. What better title than Military Inc.?
Yes, now just one final thing before I bring in our London guests. Talk about mil-biz. Is that a word that you yourself have created?
Well, it is partly my effort. In 1999-2000, I was at the Bonn International Center for Conversion. There was me, some other colleagues working in Indonesia, Pakistan, China, Angola, Indonesia, yes. We kind of coined this term, which was, and mil-biz is a combination of military and business. It means military and business. When military expands into the corporate sector, that's when you have mil-biz.
Well, may I put in just a personal view of your book, which is that it's a remarkable book in the sense that it is both academic, and you set it in a framework whereby you define it according to your academic discipline, and it's clear that in that discipline you would brand a number of other countries, Turkey, Indonesia, for example, as also matching what's been going on in Pakistan. But I'm wondering, Ziauddin, what did you think of this concept of mil-biz, and in particular of the book as a whole?
Yeah, as you said, Martin, it is an academic book. It is a kind of a thesis. And she's used Pakistan as a case study. She has done a comparative study as well with Thailand, with Turkey, and Indonesia perhaps. But she is focused on the Pakistani military capital. Mm. It is as opposed to a defense budget. She has brought out the predatory nature of military's incursions in the national economy.
Yes. Amir, what do you think of this concept of MILBIS as applied to Pakistan and as explained in the book?
I think to start with, the name was very interesting. It's a double take. It's military incorporated, but then it also, by calling it Military Inc. and not Military Public Limited Company, I think Aisha was, clearly saying that the symbiotic relationship which exists between Pakistan military and the American military machine, in last 60 years we have seen the close linkages. And then, by coining or bringing up with this idea, MILBIS or MILBIS, I think this book was needed. In the last 15, 20 years, this debate, this academic debate, and also a journalistic debate was, gathering sort of momentum that military is not only running this country, military is now, at times when it is behind power, at times it is directing power, military has acquired this country as their own, sort of public limited company where they're running schools and institutions. And they say that they will go back and, relinquish political power, they will not.
Yes, Aki, I mean, you have some grasp, as we all do, of history.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not as I mean, there aren't many societies that haven't, on occasions, been taken over by the army. And I do recall that a number of years ago, 200 or 300 years ago, we used to give vast estates to people like the Duke of Marlborough, who was able to build Blenheim Palace on the back of huge sums given to him by a grateful nation, and the Duke of Wellington. He not only got money from Britain, but he was granted a vast estate from a grateful nation of Spain. So well, what's so different about Pakistan today?
Well, there probably isn't that much difference, because Aisha, in the book, connects Pakistan to other countries, and it probably still goes on here, and she does, she actually refers to America, does the same. But the problem with Pakistan is a very young country, but there is despair in the politicians and the military that, they've created such chaos and such kind of, for the common man. And I actually don't think that the book's that academic, because I would have been really critical of it. I could read it, and I'm just a layman. And I thought it was really good how she kind of, it was fascinating how she broke down, dismantled, approaches to what's going on, and I thought it's a very, very interesting book to kind of expose what's going on. But I would have liked to have seen how she thinks. How do we dismantle it? Because I think that unless there's some kind of a revolution to break down the military and the politicians and the elitist classes, things are not going to change in Pakistan.
Right. Well, what I was thinking as I read it was that, the army has been allowed to get hold of huge chunks of the economy, and maybe I can come back to you on this. Yeah. In your effusive review of the book in Dawn newspaper, you pointed out that there has been estimated 25% control over the economy. She doesn't put that because she's a little more careful as an academic. She's got to be 25%. That's a huge slice, isn't it?
See, actually, I had started writing about military's intervention in Pakistani economy since about the 1980s, because I'm an economic journalist.
Right.
I've been critical of the defense budget. At one point, I thought, let's look at these things, Fauji foundations, army welfare. And then I came up with this topic that this army is grabbing most of the economic controls. I mean, they're producing bottled water as well as they're producing fertilizers. They have banks. They have insurance companies. They are the biggest real estate agents in the country. And now they had grabbed lots of agricultural land as well.
Yes. I'd like to turn. Yes, sorry.
If I can come in. The worst part is the beneficiaries of this all economic machine is just, not all of the military. The soldiers do not get anything out of it. It's just the officer cadre, and not all officer cadre, few. It's a cartel. It's like, I will not go as far as calling it you know, comparing it with Italians in New York, you know. But the thing is, that is the sense which is now on the street in Pakistan. There's a very few people, you know, when they're given power, they come from lower middle classes, many of them. But when they become, you know, brigadiers and generals, you know, they become part of this machine. And let me be very clear, many generals do not become part of this exercise. They retire as, you know, professional soldiers and, you know, retire. Yeah. But it's a you know, it's a group of generals who would like to kind of keep that control.
Well, I must now bring Aisha back. I mean, I was interested in your method here in the book, because you said at one point how difficult it is to gather information, and your research process would seem to me very interesting, bearing in mind that you don't exactly have a comprehensive sort of company's house register of every economic operation in Pakistan. How on earth did you gather this vast amount of information? Aisha?
Well, firstly, let me tell you, it took me about 4 to 5 years to gather this information. And some of this information was available in the public domain, but it had to be, you know, it had to be searched. But I almost had to, you know, turn into a detective. I remember somebody once asked me, so what do you want to do after you finish this book? I said, you know, probably become a detective. Because, you know, you had to look at, there were cases in different courts of law, then there were reports, then there were audit reports were critical, then we had a lot of discussion and debate in the National Assembly, which need to be brought forward, and I think what was also advantages, as far as I'm concerned personally, is that I was part of the civil service for many years, for 11 years. I was in the Auditor Department. I worked with the Department of the Auditor General. And later, after doing my PhD, I was Director of Naval Research for 2 years. So that was essential, was critical in helping me understand some of the data. And secondly, to get hold of some of the data.
Right. Now, Amir, as you read this book, did you find that it was instantly accessible, or did you feel that at certain points it was getting a bit dense? Did you?
I think, you know, because of our background in Pakistani journalism, for the last 20 odd years, you know, this has been one of the major topics. We have been trying to gather some information about Pakistan Army, its operations, its economic operations, and I think Aisha has gone to a great length in gathering this information in a country where this sort of information is not in public domain, you know, and I think she's, the way she's saying that she's spent years and years, and that is why, because it is not in public domain, the criticism will come definitely from generals that, you know, most of it, because it will remain unavailable to the people, that maybe it's hearsay, maybe it's, you know, these are factual figures which are pushed by people who are anti-army, but that does not take away the credit, you know, from her hard work.
But the common man does know that there is a lot of corruption, and like Aisha points out, you know, this is good because it gets right down to the nitty-gritty. And she's more or less like kind of articulated what's going on, which is brilliant. But I think the common man in Pakistan knows that the politicians and the military, you know, they're
subjects.
As corrupt as each other in terms of, you know, if it's the military today getting 25%.
Corruption is a different issue, but yes, I know that, you know, when people, public know that, you know, the military has been given agricultural lands to cultivate, they are running, you know, farmhouses. But one thing, that the whole concept is predatory. Mm-hmm. But the army is, you know, using this country as its, you know, cake.
Yeah, well, can I come in just to make sure that people who don't know anything about Pakistan, and obviously a large proportion of our audience doesn't, the businesses which they control, they're very diverse, and I'm quoting directly from Aisha's book now, they range from small-scale ventures such as bakeries, farms, school, and private security firms, to corporate enterprises such as commercial banks, insurance companies, radio and television channels, fertilizer, cement, and cereal manufacturing plants, and insurance businesses. And it's not just the army. The navy takes whole fishing monopolies and wipes poor communities totally out of business. Now, I mean...
An Air Force running airline.
Yes, yeah. Well, it is extraordinary. Now, the thing is, what I tell you what I was thinking, bearing in mind I don't really know a lot about how Pakistan works, I was thinking, well, why don't... Maybe the army could run these things better than civilians.
That's what exactly...
And so please tell me what this book tells you about showing that the army is not actually up to it. I mean, it's actually... Is it ruining the economy?
Yeah. See, when I wrote a piece on this subject in 2000, I was invited by the Inter-Services Public Relations Department.
Wow.
And then they told me, we had a huge discussion on the topic. And then finally they told me that, look, Mr. Ziauddin, we are contributing 3% of the GDP. We are earning our keep. So why do you worry? So that was, this was 2000. Now, by now, that must have gone very high. When I used this figure of 25%, it was a rule of thumb figure, no doubt. But I had talked to a number of people. And the corruption element is also there. In a different, there's a legalized corruption in the army, which with the promotion of each rank, an army officer is given a plot of land in the urban area to build a house at a throwaway price.
Does the book adequately explain that, or does she over-egg the pudding?
I think Aisha explains in this book when she says that, you know, there's nothing wrong if actually army wants to be part of this huge economic exercise.
But she does.
They need to kind of pay taxes, which army does not, which all of these exercises do not. These businesses will remain closed businesses. They will not allow, you know, state apparatus to look into the details of these businesses. So what this book, you know, very clearly points out, and I agree with Aisha on many of these points, that, you know, if they actually want to be part of this huge economic exercise, they should also be accountable as other businesses are, which none of these military businesses are. They do not want civilian governments to even look into it, not even discuss it in the parliaments. These things remain out of the purview of national debate.
Yes.
It's accountability and transparency. It's, you know, it's the same argument for the politicians as it is for the military.
Yes.
But
this is a very old problem. And the man on horseback, you go back to the medieval towns of Italy, they'd invite in mercenaries, and in the end the mercenaries would take over the
city. It's not a monopoly to Pakistan. You know,
But, I mean, what do you do when, in fact, a country is born out of a kind of military conflict? I mean, it is the savior of the nation.
It was not a military conflict.
It was a democratically elected country.
How come Pakistan has fallen prey to the army when it appears that India has not? How would you justify that, Aisha? How do you explain that? I know you explain it in the book. Tell us what you think.
See, let me get back to the earlier argument I wanted to come in. Firstly, for the benefit of your listener, my assessment is, and it's still a very conservative assessment, that if you put in the military business and the defense budget, then we're looking at over 67% of the GNP, the military share of national resources, is over, I would say, very comfortably over 7% of the GNP. Secondly, I think what is important to note is that this is an elite economy, and this is part of the elite economy. The reason military has never been, and the problem is that this military economy is supported by the civilians as much as by the military, and that's where the problem is. In fact, I took longer in finishing the book than I had expected, because I could understand the military's logic. I couldn't understand the logic of other stakeholders, politicians, the civil corporate sector, some other prominent civil society groups, which were constantly supporting the military in one way or the other, economically or politically. This was part of an elite economy, and they support each other. For example, very recently, there was a survey in Dawn, in fact, which suggested that the corporate sector, big business, support military in power, and the reason being that authoritarianism helps them in claiming larger resources they become part, they benefit from the military's control of resources, which then get distributed to the military elite as well as to the civilian elite. And there is, in fact, no evidence that without this authoritarian control, if we were to use free market economy principles, that these organizations would function as well as they claim they do.
Well, I must come back to the audience, to the studio guests here. We've only got a very short time left. I would like to just ask you, bearing in mind, according to Aisha's book, the complicity of both the forthcoming candidates for the prime ministership, the leading candidates, both Ms. Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif, they both have basically turned a blind eye to the rise of the military's control over the...
Well, they haven't turned a blind eye. They've participated in it. In the book, Aisha makes some great comments about how they've been a part of this. Let's call it what it is. It's corruption, and it's part of this corruption. Well, sorry.
Well, what hope do we have of anything changing if either of these two...
Martin, there is hope now. In the last 5, 6, 7 years, you know, we have seen at least two of the state institutions which were not there, which were there but they were not operated. Like, for example, an attempt by the judiciary to, you know, stand against the dictatorship. The attempt by the media to stand against, you know, and if media is proverbial fourth pillar. So we are seeing that change. People have started actually asking questions which were not happening in 70s, 80s. Now this time, you know, military seems checkmated.
I'm going to give you the last comment.
Yeah, I agree with Amir Ghauri on that. Media and judiciary, they are now operating rather in a different kind of environment.
But these are all elitist classes. That's the problem.
I don't think media is. I don't think judiciary
is. Not the media,
is,
but the rest of them are the elitist classes.
Well,
they're not
of course
doing
you've been shut down,
man.
So I don't know what
exactly. If
is going to change. It seems to me that we've got a lot of questions as we try and work out whether either Ms. Bhutto or Mr. Sharif or indeed anybody else is going to throw off the control of the military over Pakistan. Well, that's all we've got time for. We've been talking about Military Inc. by Aisha Siddiqui, published by Pluto Press in London, England, and Ann Arbor, Michigan, USA. My thanks to Aisha Siddiqui, Mohammed Ziauddin, Amar Ghauri, and Aki Nawaz. We'll be back soon with another edition of Epilogue, but we're always keen to hear what books you'd like us to review. Please email your suggestions to epilogue@presstv.co.uk. That's epilogue@presstv.co.uk. And as we're putting together some special programs for the end of the year, we really do need your ideas. Thank you for watching.